Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Quality of Life, Valley Public Radio's look at the people and the issues affecting the way we live in the San Joaquin Valley. Here is your host, Joe Moore.
Well, hello and welcome to our program. 33 years ago, California voters overwhelmingly passed Proposition 13 into law, ushering in a new era of California politics and forever changing state and local government. Not only did the constitutional amendment cut property taxes nearly in half, its implementation also ushered in a major change in the way government services are provided in the Golden State, centralizing more power in Sacramento. It also helped spark a wave of so-called ballot box budgeting, with citizens taking control of the power of the purse in both setting tax rates and spending priorities. Here's Valley Public Radio's Tracy Sharman with the story.
The number 13 often generates negative reactions, even from people who aren't particularly superstitious. You won't find the number 13 on a hotel elevator button, and good luck even trying to get through the day, Friday the 13th, without someone shuddering. But triskaidekaphobia, or the morbid fear of the number 13, didn't stop 4 million Californians from voting yes on Proposition 13. In a bit of deja vu, Governor Jerry Brown addresses the state in 1978.
The message is that the property tax must be sharply curtailed and that government spending, wherever it is, must be held in check.
Proposition 13, also known as the People's Initiative to Limit Property Taxation, carried nearly every county in California. The proposition limits property taxes to 1% of the property's selling price. To account for inflation, assessed home values can increase, but at no more than 2% a year. And lastly, Proposition 13 requires a supermajority to pass any new state taxes. What had Californians so primed for a tax revolt? Carol Lavelle, now a private appraiser, worked for the Fresno County Assessor's Office in 1978. One popular neighborhood in northeast Fresno stands out.
So because that area was experiencing a more rapid increase in value than, say, another area of town, it would be targeted for reappraisal more often than an area where prices were more moderate.
Local governments were responsible for deciding the property tax rates. It was also up to them to decide how often homes would be revalued and where to focus those assessments. Your property tax bill would be based on the home's market value, not what you paid for the home. Jean Rousseau, County Administrative Officer of Tulare, explains how some local agencies came up with that tax rate.
Prior to Prop 13, local governments would determine what their budgetary needs were on an annual basis. Then they would go to the auditor controller, who's the one who puts the tax rates on the tax bills and says, you know, what rate do we need to have to cover our budget?
In California, the average property tax rate was over 2.5%. Californians were taxed out. And they found an anti-tax crusader in Howard Jarvis.
We have a new revolution against the arrogant politicians and insensitive bureaucrats whose philosophy of tax, 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 spend, 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 elect and elect and elect is bankrupting we, the American people, and the time has come to put us down.
Jarvis led the effort to pass Prop 13. At the time, California was sitting on a $5 billion surplus. Revenues from property taxes brought in over $10 billion to special districts, cities, and county coffers. Bill Greenwood remembers that time well. He was elected as Fresno County's assessor recorder in 1978.
Well, in reality, if the total overall assessed value within their district went up by 6%, and they wanted to hold the spending at the level that it was currently at, all they had to do was reduce their tax rate, but none of them ever did that.
In 1970, the average cost of a home in California was $25,000. But by the end of that decade, according to the California Association of Realtors, the median home sales price had more than tripled, and so were homeowners' tax bills. The voters made sure Prop 13 would put a stop to that. The legislature and Jerry Brown, in his first tenure as governor, determined how to make that happen.
Proposition 13 takes place on July 1st. We have only 3 weeks to act, 3 weeks to decide multi-billion dollars of fiscal questions to set a new direction for the 5,000 units of government throughout our state.
One of the unintended consequences of Prop 13 was the shifting of power from local governments to state government, and it was felt almost immediately. Retired Fresno County Assessor Greenwood.
I think in any instance in this kind of a taxing system, you're best off to keep money at local level where the persons who are elected at the local level are directly facing and directly being contacted by the persons who are affected by that money that was just both collected and spent.
The legislature enacted two main statutes to implement Proposition 13. The first was a $5 billion bailout for local governments. The other was a permanent property tax allocation that is still more or less in place today. The law took a as-you-were approach in distributing the property tax revenues to local agencies. Same percentage, but much smaller revenues because the pie everyone was eating from had been cut in half. And in the 3 decades since Proposition 13 has been in effect, 7 more initiatives and even more statutes have affected the distribution of property tax revenues. Rousseau.
Year after year, local governments kind of cringe as to what Sacramento is going to do to balance their budget. And the more Sacramento pushes those revenues away from their state general fund and have them directly go to counties and cities and special districts, I think that's in everyone's best interest in the long run.
The Public Policy Institute of California has been tracking how residents feel about Prop 13 since its 20th anniversary. President of the PPIC, Mark Baldessari.
Most voters are also homeowners. They think about Proposition 13 from the standpoint of it provided a certain amount of stability and certainty about their taxes.
Proposition 13 remains the same, but as California continues to change, more ballot measures are brought to the voters. Ballot initiatives have quadrupled since the 70s. Baldessari.
And it's one of the reasons why today that there's so much confusion about state and local government roles and responsibilities and taxes and spending on the part of the taxpayers. But that's not something that was a function of Proposition 13. It was more of a function of state legislature's fix after Proposition 13 passed.
The governor is proposing a special election in June to take the budget crisis to the people for a vote. How those election results would affect the propositions already on California's books remains to be seen. For Quality of Life, I'm Tracy Sharman.
And you're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. Tracy Sharman now joins us in our studio for a little further discussion. Now, Tracy, I'm curious, when the people you talked to, many of whom were in office or active in the county assessor's office back in 1978 when Prop 13 went into law, was there any inkling that they had back then of how long of a shadow Prop 13 would cast in terms of California politics and the situation that counties and the state face today?
No, because Proposition 13 didn't address how it was going to be implemented. So especially for the assessor's office, I know Bill Greenwood said that it was overwhelming the amount of work they had to do because there's over 250,000 parcels in Fresno alone that they actually had to roll back those values 3 years and figure out new assessments on all those homes.
So it was very much a learning process for them implementing this as this new law came into effect in 1978.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Tracy, thank you very much for your report today. And we will now go to the phones as we have a guest joining us now from Sacramento. Many of you read his columns in the Fresno Bee and other McClatchy publications. We have Dan Walters on the line, columnist with the Sacramento Bee. Dan, are you there?
I am here.
Dan, thank you so much for joining us. There's something of irony in this particular climate that we're in right now with California back with Jerry Brown in the governor's chair in Sacramento. And once again, Prop 13 is back being talked about as one of the issues that faces the state as it works to meet its challenges fiscally. What do you think Governor Brown is, what do you think his approach is moving forward with Prop 13 as someone who was there and implementing it, initially opposed it in its state on the ballot, and then the governor who was charged with implementing it? How do you think his perspective has changed on it over the years?
I don't know that his perspective has changed. I think he still sees it as a very powerful political force in California 33 years later. But it's the irony that you mentioned is very, very evident in that the budget deficit he's now dealing with, or trying to deal with, I should say, because we don't know whether he's going to do it or not, really stems from Proposition 13, and not so much from Proposition 13 itself, but how it was implemented after the fact. Your report indicated that the legislature and the government did two things after Proposition 13 passed, and that was accurate as far as it went. But there was actually a third thing that they did in that same time frame, in the first few weeks and months after Proposition 13 passed, and that was to enact a very large state tax cut Jerry Brown, in fact, declared himself to be a born-again tax cutter. That's what he called himself, and sponsored a state tax cut. And the effect of that, the effect of the state taking on additional burdens for financing schools and local governments, the bailout, as it was called at the time, the combined effect of the bailout and the state tax cut was to throw the state budget into an immediate operational deficit. In other words, the state was spending more money, taking on more obligation than its revenue system was producing. And they financed that operational deficit out of the reserve that you mentioned earlier for a couple of years, for a few years. But by the time Jerry Brown left office in 1983, left the governorship in 1983, the state was actually in deficit situation. It had exhausted its reserves and still had an operating deficit. And I mention that because that's essentially the condition the state budget has been in ever since and is in today. Now that Jerry Brown's back in the governorship, he's basically dealing with the accumulated fallout of forces that he helped set in motion more than three decades ago by the state taking on additional burden and simultaneously cutting its ability to raise revenues. And that's the real irony that I see. In a sense, the budget that he's proposed for 2011-2012, the rest of this fiscal year plus 2011-2012, is kind of a mulligan. It's a do-over. He's proposing to shift some of the stuff back to local governments that the state assumed over the years since Proposition 13 passed. And there's an implicit thing in there. Well, we might have kind of screwed up originally, but now we're going to fix it. He doesn't say that explicitly, of course, but there's kind of a tone of that. There's a hint of that, an implication of that in all of the things that he's been saying over the last couple of months. And I think that's the real irony of the whole situation. He finds himself back dealing with the fallout of problems that he helped create over three decades ago.
We're talking with Dan Walters on Quality of Life today on Valley Public Radio. Now, Dan, I think the term third rail is probably overused in politics. It's used whether we're talking about abortion or immigration. But in California, often that term is used in talking about Proposition 13. Politicians recognize that this measure is still in large part popular with a good majority of the electorate, certainly those who own their own homes. What do you think the political calculus has been and is today in terms of dealing with Prop 13? And there's certainly efforts and have been over the years at looking at reforming it or making changes from the commercial property side of Prop 13 to other elements of it, the two-thirds requirement. Is there still support for Prop 13 in the electorate? And do you think that there's possibilities that Sacramento and elected officials may look at further changes?
Well, they're going to talk about it. It's talked about all the time, particularly as you mentioned the so-called split role of taking that benefit away from business or limiting it for business so that the business property taxes could go up. And a formal split role, in other words, really splitting the two parts apart, splitting the homes away from the businesses, would take a constitutional amendment. I don't think it would pass. It would be seen as an assault on Proposition 13 and probably fail. There's also a kind of a backdoor way of doing it that's been proposed in the legislature from time to time, and that is to change the non-constitutional law, statute law, that defines change of ownership so that when businesses change ownership over time through stock sales and whatnot, say Chevron, for example, then that would trigger reappraisal of their property. As it stands, it's only triggered when the whole business, or at least over half of the business, changes hands. So there's been some talk about that. But in terms of Proposition 13's overall impact, I think third rail is probably a very accurate description. And whether by design or by happenstance, the way Proposition 13 was drafted basically guarantees that it will remain politically popular, because when you buy a home in California, you immediately start seeing the benefits of Proposition 13, because your property tax assessment is basically frozen at the purchase price and can only go up 2% thereafter. So even though you may be paying, you buy a new house, you may be paying higher taxes than your neighbor next door with an identical house, you are still have that certainty as to what your tax bill is going to be. It's going to be 1% of that value plus about another 0.25% or a little less than 0.25% for bonds, because they come up on top. And you know that just because the property values go up in that neighborhood, you're not going to be reassessed. So Proposition 13 kind of renews its own popularity as properties change hands, and that's why the polling indicates that were Proposition 13 on the ballot today, it would pass probably just as strongly as it did in 1978.
We're talking about Proposition 13 on quality of life today, and we'd like to know what you think. You can call us. Tell us what you think about Proposition 13 today, 33 years after its passage. You can call us at 559-275-8989 or 800-224-8989. You can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. Dan Walters from the Sacramento Bee joins us right now. Dan, reform in California has been a tradition going back to the 1900s and even Hiram Johnson and those days of reform back in the late 1800s. California seems to be in a continual state of reform, and in this case, we have reforms that were enacted years ago that are now being discussed again. What does that say about the Golden State?
Well, we're a dissatisfied group of people. We always want to try to make it better. Of course, reform is in the eye of the beholder, like beauty, and one person's reform is another person's power grab or another person's money grab or something like that. The word reform is easily used. The question in many cases is it really reform, or is it just somebody trying to feather their own nest in terms of power or money or something else? And so, and this has always been a debate. Therefore, while homeowners may have seen Proposition 13 as a reform, and obviously did because they voted for it, overwhelmingly voted for it, though other people see Proposition 13 as a way for the middle and upper middle class to shun their responsibilities for paying for education and health care and social services for those less fortunate. See, so is that reform? Well, other people say, no, that's not reform. That's just greed. So the reform is in the eye of the beholder, and this debate goes on constantly, and it's occurring again in great volume right now as Jerry Brown proposes to slash safety net services, health, welfare, adult daycare, in-home supportive services, all these sorts of help for the developmentally disabled, to balance a budget proposing only to continue temporary taxes on the middle class and not, say, raising taxes on the wealthy or raising taxes on corporations. So this debate, this kind of class warfare debate, goes on. Whenever you talk about taxes and money and services, who pays, who gets, that sort of thing, this debate is basically a kind of a form of class struggle. And it was going on in 1978 when Proposition 13 passed, and it's still going on today.
We're going to go to the phones now and talk to OB in Sanger, who is a commercial property owner. OB, you're on Quality of Life.
Yeah, hi. My comment is I definitely want Proposition 13 to stay in place, and a couple of reasons. One, most leases, I own industrial buildings in Fresno, and most leases have a clause that say you can pass the tax increase along to the tenant, which simply means that that's going to drive up prices for the consumer because the tenant's going to charge more for their product or services if that happens, or it's going to drive the tenant out of California if it continues to raise their rents. But the other issue is a current issue, and that is this recession we're in. One of my buildings has been sitting empty for 2 years now. Luckily, I just leased it last week, but for 2 years, I was paying the property taxes on that building along with other expenses. So you could actually, drive people who own commercial properties out of business if you impose higher taxes on them, particularly when they have vacancies.
Well, thank you very much, OB. That's a very good point, and we appreciate your call today.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Dan Walters still on the line with us talking about Proposition 13, and I want to turn the perspective now and look at the larger context of Proposition 13 in terms of another trend that has taken hold over the last 33 years or so, and that's the trend of voters doing some of the budgeting at the ballot box. And we have had a number of propositions over the years, both on the revenue side and also on the expenditure side, where voters have said, this is how I want my money spent, or this is what I'm willing to pay. Dan, what's been the impact of ballot box budgeting in California?
Well, it's made the job of fashioning the budget in Sacramento and also in local government more difficult because it creates more restricted pots of money that can't be spent on, you know, they can't be shifted around, or at least not easily. And it sets priorities may not square with the actual priorities at the time. And there's a great deal of irony in that. People decry it all the time, particularly in Sacramento. Oh, this is terrible. We can't get a budget together because of all this ballot box budgeting. And yet politicians themselves like ballot box budgeting in a way because it takes them off the hook. And a good example of that, again, is happening right now. Jerry Brown wants to put a whole bunch of budget-related stuff on a special election ballot in June and have the voters decide basically how they want the money to be spent. He would like them to continue some temporary taxes for five more years, about $11 billion a year, and he wants to tie that to sending that tax money not to Sacramento, but down into the hands of county governments to pay for a specific group of services and functions that would be shifted from the state. He calls it realignment. So it's kind of, the mother of all ballot box budgeting, an entire election basically devoted to the voters deciding how much they're going to tax themselves and how that money is going to be spent. And it will basically restrict the whole budgetary process even more and also create the specter of a kind of a long-term budget problem, because this money would go down to counties to pay for these services for only 5 years, and then those taxes would disappear. And then who would pay for those services thereafter? And the governor wants another constitutional amendment saying that the state would guarantee that money to local governments after the temporary taxes expire. So it would take that much more money, a good chunk of the state budget, and tie it up even more in constitutional law. So he may complain, and he and other politicians may complain about ballot box budgeting on one thing, but they're actually actively pursuing it. And the reason for it is very simple. Voters like the idea of being able to have that control because the illusion of control, I should say, because it gives them a feeling that they have a stake in the whole thing. And that's why he wants to do it that way, because he believes voters are more likely to vote for these tax extensions if they have also a sense that they can determine where that money is going to go into local governments and not into the bottomless pit of the state treasury. So he is basically feeding on that perhaps mistaken idea that you can dictate budgetary priorities through the ballot box, and he wants to increase it, not decrease it.
Again, our guest today has been Dan Walters from the Sacramento Bee. We're talking about Proposition 13, its legacy, and its impact on today's California. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. My name is Joe Moore. You can call us with your thoughts on Proposition 13, ballot box budgeting. Has it worked for California? The phone number in the Fresno area, 559-275-8989, or toll-free 1-800-224-8989. You can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. And we'll now turn to another guest joining us on the telephone. We have Mr. David Klein, spokesman for the California Taxpayers Association. David, welcome to Quality of Life.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Now, David, your organization, as I understand it, is a supporter of Proposition 13. How do you feel voters still feel about this measure that Howard Jarvis and his cohorts passed into law, had California voters pass into law back in 1978?
Right. Well, the polls all show that people still support it at a ratio of about 2-1, which is the same as, what passed Prop 13 in 1978. So it still has about the same level of support that it had back then. And we think people understand that it has really stabilized property taxes and made them predictable, which was a big problem in the past, was that they were unpredictable and not stable. And Prop 13 really changed that.
Now, there's a number of groups that have called for reforming Proposition 13 and looking at the split role, specifically the issue in regards to commercial properties. And there's been some concern that some commercial properties aren't being assessed at that same level or an appropriate level, or in the case of a way that the state has determined change of ownership. There, mm-hmm. Proposition 13 is a little more complex or has a few more facets than the immediate thing that people think about, and that's the property tax they pay on their homes. What does your group think about some of those other elements of Prop 13?
Well, first off, I think people sort of have a misperception that Prop 13 was never intended to do anything for business property. The fact is, before Prop 13, both business property and homeowner property was treated the same, and both were having the same sorts of problems with assessors giving these very unpredictable valuations, sometimes based on not what your property was actually being used as, but the assessor's opinion of what the highest and best use of that property would be, or based on if your neighbor's properties were selling and, at increased values, that would increase your property value, and therefore, your property tax would go up even though you were just using your property as your home or your business. So Prop 13 took a situation that affected both business and homeowner properties, and it stabilized both. So both types of properties were having problems before, and Prop 13 addressed the problems for both. But I think the main thing to think about now is that the business properties aren't being assessed at the a lower level because of Prop 13. We've done a study, and this is on our website at caltax.org, that shows that the percentage of homeowner and business property that existed prior to Prop 13, it's almost exactly the same now as far as the burden of the tax.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio, and we are joined by David Klein from the California Taxpayers Association. Now, David, tell us a little more about your thoughts on reform in California. This was certainly something that was a popular issue back in the 1970s, and in some way, Prop 13 is one of these sacrosanct issues in California today. There's been a variety of groups aiming to make changes over the years. The two-thirds vote requirement for the passage of new taxes is another element in the Prop 13 equation. What are your thoughts on that particular issue?
Well, we support the two-thirds vote. We think it gives taxpayers a little more protection before the taxes are increased. It sort of forces lawmakers to look at other ways of either generating revenue or cutting costs in government to balance the budget before just turning to a tax hike. Because, a tax hike is pretty much the severe solution in that you're taking more money out of the private sector economy, and it really does have an effect on the state's ability to create jobs and really have a prosperous economy.
Again, we're talking with David Klein from the California Taxpayers Association on Quality of Life today, and we'd like to hear your thoughts on Prop 13 and ballot box budgeting. You can call us with your comments, 800-224-8989, or in the Fresno area, 559-275-8989. Now, David, Howard Jarvis, who led the effort to bring Prop 13 into law, has become something of a larger-than-life figure in California politics even after his death.
Right.
What do you think that says about the California electorate?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it would say about the electorate specifically. It's
that he still, in his name, still has such an impact on California 33 years after the passage of the bill that he led, to considerable opposition from the political establishment.
Well, he really does stand for the common man having an issue that he really feels strongly about and getting something done. If you look, he was sort of a larger-than-life character when he was living, and so he has remained so, I believe, in part because he said some, you know, easy-to-quote things. And he also led a very popular change. I mean, the people really were fed up with the property tax system in the 70s. It had gone for many years where the legislature had said they were going to enact some sort of property tax reform, and then the people never saw the reform happen. So after many years of not getting the reform that was crucially needed, people were fed up with opening their property tax bill and seeing that, you know, it might have doubled over the last year because the neighbors had all sold their houses or the assessor had decided property values were going to skyrocket this year. So he was, you know, leading the right cause at the right time and was the right man to do it, I guess. He got this proposition passed by 2/3 of the voters when a lot of people didn't think he had a chance because he was going up against many of the established political powers.
Well, David, thank you very much for joining us today and giving us your perspectives on Proposition 13. We'll be back in just a moment with some of your comments on Prop 13. This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Quality of Life comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. My name is Joe Moore, and we're talking about Proposition 13 today on our program. We are now joined on the phone by Mr. Paul McIntosh. He's the executive director of the California State Association of Counties. Paul, welcome to our program today.
Thank you. Good to be on.
Now, Prop 13 has had a big impact on local government throughout the state. What does your organization, what do your members, how do counties throughout the throughout California, how are they impacted by Proposition 13 today in 2011?
Well, they continue to be impacted dramatically by the reduction in the property taxes available to local government to provide the services that are asked for, demanded by our citizenry. Prop 13 has made it very difficult to continue to fund those local government services and has steadily increased the reliance of local governments on the state government to be their benefactor and help to fund those programs and services. And other than the reduction in property tax, I think the unintended and unfortunate consequence of Proposition 13 has been to concentrate a great deal of authority and responsibility in Sacramento further from the people and further from their access to government.
Let's go to the phones now and take a call from Phil in Bakersfield on line two. Phil, welcome to Quality of Life.
Good morning. I've been enjoying your comments today.
Your thoughts on Prop 13.
Okay. First of all, I need to tell you that I'm a retired lawyer here in Bakersfield. And for many years, I represented several counties in connection with defending their mineral rights property values. Bill Greenwood, who was on earlier, actually was an assistant in Fresno when I did the work for that county. And I can tell you that a major consideration for the passage of Proposition 13 was the unfairness of balancing all of the needs of local government on the property owners. And I think all you've talked about primarily has been the effect of Proposition 13 and the implementation of it. And I think that the main thing that the people should be aware of is that the services that people require locally and statewide as well, those services go beyond the benefits of property ownership. Consequently, the tax base should go beyond property ownership, and that is what the underlying principle of what Proposition 13 ended up accomplishing, and I think that's why it will continue. We have a lot of demands. They have no relationship to someone who owns a piece of property, and all the pain of government services needs to be shared across the entire population.
Well, Phil, thank you very much for that comment today, and thanks for calling Quality of Life. And I'd like to then take that comment back to our guest, Mr. McIntosh from the California State Association of Counties. That's certainly something that we've seen happen as a consequence of Prop 13. We have a greater share of the burden for operating government coming from other sources other than property tax revenue. Sales tax has become a big driver. How does that impact counties?
Well, I think what it's the largest impact has been what we term the fiscalization of land use, where land use decisions have been increasingly made because of the availability of sales tax or other types of revenue sources as opposed to good, solid land use planning. And unfortunately, many of that happens within our cities, and you see them competing with each other for auto malls and shopping areas. And now it's washed into redevelopment, where redevelopment funds capture property taxes to create zones of retail area because the city can then generate a great deal more sales tax.
Now, Paul, I'm not sure if you were with us when Dan Walters was on our program, and he was talking about some of the concern that local government has right now with Governor Brown's proposed budget, taking it forward 5 years. Once that money from Sacramento that's going to help pay for the responsibilities that's being shifted, that's proposed to be shifted back to local government, once that goes away, there's some big concern, as I understand it, among local government that how do we pay for this in the future? What's your organization's opinion on that particular part of the government reform and budget reform proposal from Governor Brown?
Well, I didn't hear Mr. Walters' comments, but I'm assuming you're talking about the proposed realignment of public safety programs.
Correct.
To local government. The constitutional amendment draft released yesterday afternoon by the Department of Finance would provide that for the first 5 years would be extension of the current sales and vehicle license fees used to fund that. And then in the sixth year, it would become an obligation of the state, an obligation of the state's general fund, right behind public bonded indebtedness and Proposition 98. So, frankly, we're comfortable with that language as being an ongoing obligation of the state. Now, naturally, that puts the onus back upon the state's general fund as to where, on an annual basis, they would be coming up with the money to fund those public safety programs.
Let's go to the phones now and go to Ray in Bakersfield. Ray, you're on Valley Public Radio's Quality of Life.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to say that Proposition 13, I think when it was passed, it's the reason that it's led to the downfall of education in California. Now, I'm a retired teacher, and I remember back in 78 when it passed, I was laid off at that time. And ever since then, all I've seen in education, even with the passage of Proposition 98, is that funding for education has gone down every year. You know, I remember when education was free, and even, you know, going to college or university, you didn't pay a tuition. And now you do, and it's increasing every year. So, you know, the problem with education, it's just going downhill in California really fast.
Well, Ray, thank you very much for that comment. We have one more caller that I'd like to get in before we move on to our next topic, and that would be Jim from Bakersfield. Jim, you're on Quality of Life.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think Proposition 13 is a fantastic, amazing scam. If you look at it, it equates, once again, it's been done recently, individuals and corporations, which initially sounds like fairness, but fairness, yeah, the devil's in the details. If you look at it closely, you'll see the typical person, not me, I've lived in my house 20 years, but the typical person moves every 5 to 7 years. That means that their tax will go up because it's based on the cost of their new property. The typical company doesn't do that, but also has some other ways in which they can avoid it too. Chevron, for example, one of the sponsors of your program, if I understand correctly, and I could be wrong on this, but if I understand correctly, they did not buy. They merged with Texaco. So therefore, they have not bought a new property. Their tax rate doesn't go up based on the new evaluation of it. PG&E, AT&T can swap properties. And therefore, since they did not buy a new property, the taxes don't go up. So individuals' properties, they move. They go up. Corporations' properties, they don't move. They merge, they swap, they trade. So it's fantastic, an amazing deal for corporations. The grandma and grandpa who the issue was made needed that constant tax ratio. Yes, it fits them, but boy, the devil's in the details, and the payment clearly goes out and costs us a lot in terms of education and other things. Thank you.
Well, Jim, thank you for that call, and that's been a consistent area of criticism. We've talked about that today on our program, the split role issue. So, again, thank you very much for your call, and we'd like to thank our guest, Paul McIntosh, the Executive Director of the California State Association of Counties, for talking with us today about Proposition 13. Paul, we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Stay tuned in just a moment. We'll be back with a look at how the Valley's public libraries are faring in this era of shrinking budgets and technological change. That's coming up in just a moment on Quality of Life.
Friends, this is Franz Weinschenk inviting you to tune into Valley Writers Read Wednesday at 7. When we'll be featuring a new author, Michael Boulder, whose story is about what it's like being a lawyer. Now, it's one thing being a corporate attorney making a six-figure salary, but something quite different being a public defender working with rigid prosecutors, nervous clerks, brittle court reporters, pretentious judges, and petty thieves. And inasmuch as ours is such an overburdened legal system, it's true, especially when dealing with misdemeanor cases, that judges, prosecutors, and public defenders try to settle cases without going to trial when maybe they should have. Maybe that's why our author, Michael Boulder, calls his story Dump Truck. It'll all be on Valley Writers Read Wednesday at 7. Join us.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. San Joaquin Valley residents have relied on free access to information at local public libraries for over 100 years. And despite the changes in media over the past century, from videos to the internet and e-books, in many cases, library use continues to rise. However, like most arms of local government, the Valley's public libraries are now facing their own set of tough challenges. Not only are declining sales and property tax revenues having a negative impact on library budgets, but the governor's new proposed state budget also has some significant reductions in store for libraries. Here to tell us more about how libraries plan to weather the financial storm, we have a guest in studio, Laurel Prisney, the county librarian for the Fresno County Public Library. Laurel, welcome to Quality of Life.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You've been in the news lately. You're relatively new in your position.
I am.
First year here with the Fresno County Public Library. The library has undergone great growth and expansion in the past decade.
Yes.
In large part through Measure B. Now the library is facing some challenges with the economy. Tell us some of the immediate issues impacting the library right now and in this next fiscal year.
Well, you stated it very well. Part of our issue is that our Measure B funding, which is sales tax revenue, is declining, has been declining since the recession, since about 2008, as has our property tax. And consequently, we're starting to see a fairly large disparity between that and our expenditures. And the library's actually been very healthily funded with Measure B funding. We're very fortunate to have that. But given that the economy is not turning around as quickly as we anticipated, we are now experiencing some challenges with escalating costs in salaries and benefits and retirement funding and whatnot. So we're facing a point where we need to look at restructuring the organization to continue to deliver that excellent service that the library is known for and still meet those promises with Measure B. The other really immediate one, and you talked about it, is Governor Brown's proposed cuts. He's actually proposing and cutting all library funding to libraries, and that is for Fresno County. Works out to being about $725,000 either directly or indirectly. So it has a real impact to Fresno County as well as, you mentioned, the San Joaquin Valley system, which is a cooperative system as well.
Now, before we bring in our next guest, I'd also like to give out the phone numbers one more time so listeners can share their comments. How do you use the library? How has your use of the library changed with new technology and the like? The phone number here is 559-275-8989. Or 800-224-8989. And I'd now like to bring in our guest on the telephone. Joining us from the Kern County Library System, we have Sherry Gomez, the Deputy Director of Libraries. Sherry, welcome to Quality of Life.
Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little about what the impact of the economy, the state budget, your own funding sources in Kern County. What's the impact of the current economic crunch on the Kern County Library?
Well, like so many libraries, we have had a very significant impact. We are a general fund department of the county, and that means that unlike Fresno that has the wonderful Measure B and some other dedicated sources of funding, we are funding, the majority of it comes from the general fund of the county. So as those funds are diminish, our portion of those funds also is very much affected. We have had several years of reductions of general funding from the county. Last year, we experienced a 10% reduction from the previous fiscal year, and that meant laying off of staff, reducing hours, reducing our book budget. So it has had a very significant effect on the county here, the library.
Now, I'd like to open this next question up to both of you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've anecdotally seen is that libraries are very popular today. Sometimes people say, oh, why a library? You have so much access to other sources of information today with the internet and other devices. How have libraries changed? Are they becoming more community centers, more information portals? What is today's library in terms of usage and its relevance to its community? Go ahead, Laurel. I'll let you take that first.
Okay, thank you. It's really interesting. Libraries are really all things to all people, and we really we've got one foot into the technology future, but we still have one foot in the traditional past. Bricks and mortar library is the way we refer to it. Books are still the page turner books. The paper materials are still very much a part of our lives, as is the new technologies, including e-books and downloadable materials from the web and electronic resources. And we are certainly a portal and try to be a portal to all of those information resources. But the real challenge is trying to maintain all of those. And one of the things that we have found is that we are becoming a community hub. I just recently had a focus group session with some residents in the community. And interestingly enough, when asking them what they saw the library to be in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, the community center was really critical. They view the library as the place where they can come and meet with people, or they can come and get their books, or they can check out materials. But it's really critical, as far as they're concerned, that the library maintain that community presence.
Now, Sherry, what's your reaction in Kern County? How are users there accessing the library in this new era?
Well, I certainly second what Laurel has said about the community center. We've also, with the addition of the technology and the availability of computers, we have seen an enormous increase in the number of people that will come to the library to use our computers. We have some areas where we have very low socioeconomics, and so those people are taking advantage of the availability of computers to be used here in the library. You know, it's the way that so much business is now being done. You apply for jobs online. You apply for certain services online. And so people that don't have the computers available at their home or at other places are really counting on the library to have that service for them.
And again, we'd like to hear from our listeners out there. We'd like to hear how you utilize your public library services in the Valley. You can call us with your thoughts and comments, 559-275-8989 or 800-224-8989. Now, I'll throw this one back to Laurel. These cuts that we're talking about, what do they mean to the end user?
Well, what it means, actually, Sherry pointed out one of the most important things, and that is the availability of resources, and particularly our computers. It is very true. Libraries kind of level the playing field so that anyone, no matter what their socioeconomic status is, can come in and use the resources. These cuts mean that we are going to have less computers. We're going to be open less time. Not necessarily Fresno, but I'm talking in general to all libraries. Fresno, is, as Sherry pointed out, is actually in a little bit better shape because of our funding base. But it does mean that we have to start strategically looking at how we can deliver services with less funding.
What is this? What's the particular issue involved with the state funding and the library loan issue? There was some talk in the media recently about if this funding is reduced or eliminated, as is proposed, that users would then have to pay for library materials. Is that correct? And can you explain that a little more?
Yeah. And this is something Sherry and I, Kern County and Fresno County are the two largest systems within the San Joaquin Valley Library System. And we do an awful lot of lending of materials back and forth between libraries, including Kern and Fresno County. And this proposed reduction will actually take away funding that we get now. I believe it's $5.66 for every loan that we provide to a customer outside of the library system. And what Governor Brown's cuts will do is take that and actually cut it off. So what it means is that it's going to become harder to open our doors and share resources amongst the co-op as well as outside with, you know, interlibrary loans to other libraries outside of the San Joaquin Valley. So it's making it harder for us to be the resource sharers that we've always been, and we are always, you know, trying to make sure that we share information. But this makes it so that we will have to circle the wagons, if you will.
Let's go to the phones now and talk to William in Fresno. William, you're on Quality of Life talking about libraries.
Hi, yes. I'm a dad. I have two little kids, and I'm also a husband. The library is pretty much a staple of our family. What most people don't realize is the library offers much more than books. You could get DVDs, audiobooks, CDs, and the website is actually much more helpful because you could actually go online, find out whether or not your local library is carrying the books that you want before you go out and get it, or you could have it shipped to your local library from any other neighboring library. The only thing the Fresno County Library and other neighboring library places are lacking is an iPhone app. I need an iPhone app.
On its way.
Thank you very much for that call, William. That's very interesting. And this shows, I guess, how technology is changing the world. Sherry, your comments on the impact of cuts Are you looking at laying off additional librarians with these proposed cuts and the other things that you're facing right now? What are some of the other impacts?
Well, we are anticipating a proposed 5% cut for our fiscal year 11-12. That will mean a drastic reduction in our book budget. We have, as I pointed out, we have already reduced the number of hours of opening in our branches, and so we don't want to start with more cuts to our branches. So we're looking at other cuts, and the book budget will be one of those. That's a catch-22, of course, because if we're not able to purchase materials, then we don't have the up-to-date materials that people are coming into the library to look for. We depend very heavily on Fresno and the materials that they're able to purchase through their Measure B. That's been a lifesaver for Kern County over the years.
Now, let me ask both of you this. How do you see libraries evolving for the future? As we look ahead, we certainly have this immediate era of budget crisis. Moving beyond that, where do you see our libraries going for the future in the Valley? Now, Laurel, I'll let you start.
Oh, boy. I was hoping I could take this one. Technology, certainly. I think we have to avail ourselves of all the technology that we can. And I think that as we're forced to make these drastic cuts to staffing and to book budgets, we have to look at ways to be more cost-effective, and often technology helps us in that regard. I know that there is now it's like the jukebox style library service that you can put out, and some libraries have been testing that. And I can see us, I'm not saying I want to replace a branch with that, but I can see us going to those kinds of services so that we can provide services anytime, anywhere. And I think that that's the key. Libraries really are certainly the community hub we talked about, but they're also always available no matter what time. And the gentleman who called in pointed that out by being able to go to the website. So I see us evolving that way. I think, you know, we just have to continue to be responsive to our client base and make sure that we are answering their needs, whatever those might be.
And Sherry, just with a few minutes left, what do you see as the future for libraries in Kern County?
Certainly responding to the technology demands of those people. The previous caller put it so succinctly, what about the phone app?
Mm-hmm.
So, being responsive to those breakthroughs in technology, and certainly educating the public about how available we are. I think so many people are still very surprised at the availability online through our websites 24/7, as Laurel said, and the technology that's available here in our libraries, and also the materials that we have available.
Well, Sherry Gomez, Deputy Director of the Kern County Library System, we thank you for joining us on the phone today. And
it was my pleasure.
And Laurel Prisney, the County Librarian for the Fresno County Public Library, thank you for joining us in studio today.
Thank you.
This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of audio engineer Marv Allen, production manager Don Weaver, and producer and reporter Tracy Sharman, I'm Joe Moore. You can follow us online at kvpr.org and at Twitter at twitter.com/kvpr. This is Valley Public Radio's Quality of Life. I'm Joe Moore.
Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.